It's time to get up and get your day started.
Morant. Oh! A jawbreaker!
It's Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. The first hour of Sports 56 Mornings is brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Now, here are your hosts, Greg and Eli.
Time to wake up. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday morning. Thank you for joining us. It is time for another edition of Sports 56 Mornings, the Tuesday, May 7th, 2024 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Zach Boyd with you from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, where family and fun come together. Their spring sale motors right along. Factory direct pricing on swimming pools, spas, patio furniture. Check it out for yourself, 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. And hour number one of the program each and every day is brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Currently 74 degrees, overcast, cloudy skies. We're looking at a high of 83. There is a shower or two around the area early, then partly cloudy for the rest of the afternoon. That chance of rain at about 40%. Tonight we're looking at 71 degrees, variable clouds, scattered thunderstorms, and gusty wind. Small hail is even possible tonight with a marginal risk of severe weather. And then for your Wednesday, it looks like it'll be pretty nice with mostly sunshine, but some clouds, 85 degrees and about a 25% chance of precipitation. That's your weather forecast, but we're here to talk sports, and we will do that. The NBA playoffs moving right along, and how about those Minnesota Timberwolves? We'll talk about their 2-0 lead over the Denver Nuggets. The Knicks and the Pacers begin their series with the Knicks outlasting the Pacers. We got some more NBA news to get into. We got the draft lottery coming up this Sunday. More transfer portal news, both basketball and football. And that football news involves the University of Memphis. We'll talk some Major League Baseball as well. And some bowl news. In fact, we got a changing of the guard, if you will. We'll get to that on the program today. Connor O'Gara joins us at 7:25 from Saturday Down South. Jeff Crane, University of Memphis interim athletics director, at 8:25. We have our weekly golf segment with Mickey Barker and friends. That'll be coming up at 9:05. Mickey Barker, the administrator of golf in the city of Memphis. And then at 9:25, Lawrence Dockery, our soccer insider, who's a writer for Soccer Talk. That's World Soccer Talk. And also the 901 Soccer Podcast. He'll join us as tonight Memphis 901 FC is in Texas to play in the round of 32 in the U.S. Open Cup. They'll face FC Dallas from the MLS. We will talk about that today with Lawrence coming up at about 9:25. We got Humdinger's Trivia, your chance to win a $25 gift certificate to Humdinger's. And, of course, we'll take your calls and texts as we do each and every day on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. That is your lineup for your Tuesday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. What's going on?
Not much. Just trying to stay dry in this world.
A lot of clouds over the last several days. It was up in St. Louis where I was, and here in Memphis, and just in this general region of the country. And hopefully before too long, it all goes away. We'll have nice sunshine. Although I feel the humidity. It's already here. It's early May. I feel the humidity. I have a feeling it's going to be a nasty summer as far as that's concerned, but I guess it comes with the territory. Also coming with the territory is good playoff basketball action. And normally, at this time of the year, we get that. Last night, we certainly did in that Knicks-Pacers game, not without a little controversy, but the Knicks open up their Eastern Conference semifinal series with a win over the Pacers. But we'll begin with the latter game of the two, and that was the Nuggets and the Timberwolves. And my, oh my, the Timberwolves go to Denver and win 106-80. What about that mile-high altitude that we always hear? The T-Wolves say, I got your stinking mile-high altitude. Without Rudy Gobert, mind you, who was out because his wife was giving birth to their first child, the T-Wolves go 2-0 up on Minnesota, or not Denver, in control of this series against the defending champions as they win going away 106-80. Anthony Edwards, 27 points, 7 assists, more of a
team game in this win as opposed to Ant going off in game number one. Cat had 27 points to match Edwards' 27. He added 12 rebounds. They got great support from the bench led by Naz Reid. In the meantime, the Joker held to 16 rebounds, 8 assists. Jamal Murray has to be good, as they proved it last year, for Denver to win it all, was 3 of 18 from the field for 8 points. He had 13 rebounds, but only 8 points. Denver in a huge hole, Eli. I did not see this one coming.
Yeah, pretty shocking to see them lose 2 in a row at home. I think they lost 8 games at home this season. They're normally such a great home team, but they just couldn't make shots. 34% from the field. The thing that stood out to me, they missed a ton of shots, obviously. They had 18 offensive rebounds, but only 8 second chance points. They went 4 of 17 in second chance shooting. And you just don't usually see that with them, with Jokic and Gordon. But with Murray having that night shooting, Michael Porter Jr. finally had a bad shooting night in this postseason. He had been unbelievable. I think had been at 50% from 3-point range. He goes 1 for 7. I mean, there was just, you look at the plus minuses for the starting 5 of the 2 teams, and every starter for Minnesota was at least plus 13. And every starter for Denver was at least a minus 12, or at best a minus 12. It was just the starting fives dominated for Minnesota. And they are rolling. And Edwards and Towns, and they're kind of doing whatever they want to do right now. It's impressive.
There was only one member of the Nuggets who had a plus in the plus minus, and that was Chris Brown. It was plus 2 in his 11 minutes off the bench. So it was a total domination with the starters and a total domination with the bench players for Minnesota. Denver went 9 of 30 from 3, so that's just 30%. They made 4 less than Minnesota. Minnesota was 13 of 33, so they shot 39.4% from 3. Denver did out-rebound them by the count of 50 to 42, and I guess a lot of that was because Rudy Gobert was not in there for Minnesota. But you had the former Grizzly Kyle Anderson getting the start in Gobert's stead, and he ended up with 9 rebounds to go along with 6 points and 8 assists. So he filled the stat sheet. Kyle Anderson did his job. Mike Conley, the conductor, the former Memphis Grizzly, not much, right? 4 points, but 6 assists, 2 steals, and a plus 20 out there with his team. Josh Minot, the former Memphis Tiger, he played 3 minutes, took 1 shot from 3, and knocked it down. So nice to see. Again, Minnesota, if Minnesota wins it all, not a bad thing for people around this area, because you have Conley, who's beloved, Kyle Anderson, Josh Minot, the former Tiger, all winning a ring if they can go on and win it. But baby steps. And right now, if they can polish off Denver, knock out the defending champions, I think they have a great chance to get to the NBA Finals. We'll see what happens in that other series between Dallas and Oklahoma City. But for Minnesota, they could not have written it up any more perfect than how it turned out to be in these first 2 games. And for Denver, they got to figure things out. Jokic has been held in check pretty much. Murray has really struggled. And Denver, it just, all you have to do is look at the last couple of years. 2 years ago, Murray got hurt. Denver wasn't good enough. Last year, Murray was healthy. He was great to go along with Jokic, the best player in the NBA, and they won the NBA title. And now you got Murray struggling. Jokic is being held, like I said, in check for mere mortals. They're not getting much from the bench. Holiday did give them 13 off the bench. But Caldwell Pope in the starting lineup, not much at all. You couple that with a struggle from Porter, as you mentioned, who was 1 of 7 from 3, and Murray's struggles, 3 of 18 from the field. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, there was a couple of interesting moments in the game. First, Michael Malone just losing his mind early and somehow not getting a technical.
That was patience from that referee.
I Yes, I think Mark Davis realized that the call was missed because it was clearly an offensive foul on Cat, which would have been a massive call because it would have been a second foul in the first quarter. I've never seen a coach get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to come on the court that far, it's a timeout, but still, to come charging at the official standing underneath the basket and get right in his face screaming like that. And Mark Davis said afterwards he didn't say anything that was unsportsmanlike, or was, I think is what that the term he used. I mean, like, just yelling in your face like that, like that seems like it's an automatic technical. To be that aggressive towards a referee is crazy that they didn't get him a technical.
Well, yeah, but if I recall, Popovich got away with murder a lot of times, going crazy in the face of officials. But you're right. I thought it would have been an easy technical foul call. I guess he was waiting for a magic word, and he didn't hear a magic word.
And then you had the situation later in the game where Jamal Murray throws a heating pad onto the floor, and the officials did not know where it came from. So there was nothing done there either. No technical handed out, no nothing for that. And it was funny because was it Chris Finch, I would have said that, like, they were, you know, pleading with the officials, saying, like, because the officials said they didn't know if it came from the bench or not. And he said, well, we were telling them it was probably unlikely that a fan brought a heating pad to the game.
Exactly.
So it probably came from the bench. Just seems logical that there's a heating pad. I don't think somebody in the front row is really nursing that sore back at tonight's game. So we're going to guess it probably came from the bench. But the officials still did nothing to review it or anything else. And so Jamal Murray avoids a technical for that. So it was a weird night all around last night for officials and things like that. But man, it's Denver avoiding some technicals last night that should have probably been handed out.
Well, it was interesting because the theme of the night, as I'm following along, watching the game and following along on X, is that in the Knicks-Pacers game, they called everything tight, had some very iffy calls. And in the Denver game against Minnesota, they let them get away with everything. Like, they allowed the physicality and even going a little bit overboard to stand and not blow the whistle, stop the flow of the game, and make it all about the officials. I don't know if I got that feel from either one of those games, but certainly they allowed them to get away with a lot more in the latter game.
Oh, that the first, again, when they let that, with Carl Anthony Towns, I mean, just, he clocked Murray. Like, that, they banged once, and okay, that's fine. But the second time, like, he came into him hard with the shoulder. Like, that, I would have thought would have been called a charge 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was. Maybe this was just the 10%. Like, and I think that's probably why Mark Davis didn't give him a long time. I think they probably realized, like, yeah, oh gosh, yeah, I missed that one. I missed that one badly. But they were letting, because when Malone, it was funny because when Malone came flying out there, Anthony Edwards was complaining to Davis about the play that had just happened where he thought he was fouled. There was a lot of contact, especially like early in that game. They set the tone of like, we're going to let some stuff go. Jokic was complaining. Carl Anthony Towns, it felt like, could have had four fouls in the first quarter. Like, they were letting him be very, very physical, and they were letting Jokic be physical the other. Like, it was a ton of banging on the on either end that they were just letting it go, letting him play it out.
Well, people say as long as they're calling or not calling on both sides, then that's fine. And every crew and every official is going to see things differently. You would like uniformity across the board, but there's so much inconsistency in officiating or reffing in the NFL, baseball, certainly umpiring, the way you call balls and strikes. They're human beings. It's always going to be different. But I wonder if the crew gets together before the game and they say, listen, there's a lot of physicality that's going to happen. We don't want to take away from the game and blow our whistles a million times. So let's allow them to play with a little more flow and physicalness. And then in the other game, it was a lot tighter as we make that segue to the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. And I know there was the kick ball that was missed, that call. But in the end, there's Jalen Brunson. And Jalen Brunson, while he was very good last year and thus got the huge contract, he has been everything and a donut for the New York Knicks. I mean, everything they could ask for, as this guy goes for over 40, four straight games of 40 or more, goes for 43 to be exact. And the Knicks win 121-117. This is why I brought up last week with Halliburton. I know he's really, really good, but let's slow the roll on like superstar. Halliburton had 6 points. That guy has to step up big time. And if he did, I think Indiana could have stolen game number one. But to me, the difference was the starters for the Knicks, here are the numbers across the board as far as minutes played. And I'm not saying it's always the case that the more minutes you give your starters, you're going to win. But here's the Knicks starters. 42, 36, 43, 48, which was hard. He played the entire game, and 43. For the Pacers, 36, 30, 34, 29, and 36. So there's the age-old question. Do I give guys rest, or do I just roll with my mules and let them? Well, the Knicks said, we're rolling with these guys. We don't care about our bench. Those guys are playing the bulk of the game. That's what they did, and they outlasted the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, and that's especially with Josh Hart. As Tom Thibodeau says, like, he doesn't ever, like, somebody asked him last series, the one game, like, did you ever think about taking Josh Hart? He's like, I don't ever think about taking Josh Hart. I'm like, Josh Hart just plays. That's what he does. He just, he's out there, and he's going to keep playing, I guess, until he asks to come out. The three Villanova guys continue to be awesome. Brunson, the fourth quarter by Brunson was a masterclass. He gets to the elbow. It is, you just put two on the board. It is that little step back, whatever he wants to do. He is in complete control. I mean, the 21 in the fourth, in the last series, he did struggle a little bit at the free throw line. Last night, goes 14 of 14, hits every big free throw down the stretch. He's got 40 or more now in four straight playoff games. And if you go back to the fifth game, he had 39. So he's got five straight games of at least 39 points in the postseason. You know, last year he had a 41 point game, a 38 point game. Like, this dude in the postseason is awesome. And I mean, that fourth quarter was like, just, he was like toying with Indiana, it felt at times. Didn't matter who they put on him, he would do figure out something. And then when they ran a double team at him, he hits DiVincenzo, who hits the three. And but those three guys, like, it's Hart, DiVincenzo, and Brunson, which is just crazy to think three guys from the same school playing on the same NBA team and just carrying that team. Now, the officiating, certainly there were some questionable things. And I always learn things. I had no idea that if they call a kicked ball,
it's not reviewable.
It's not reviewable. And I don't know why that wouldn't be reviewable.
Yeah, it's stupid.
That seems like a very simple reviewable thing. Like, why not let that be a challengeable thing by a coach?
Exactly.
I don't know why we're saying that that's not. Like, it's something that's easy to review and see whether the guy kicked it or did not kick it. And so I don't know what the thought process would be behind saying that we're not going to review a kicked ball.
Like, yeah, yeah. When you were talking about replay and you said, okay, we're going to look at replay for this and this. How about a kicked ball? Nah, we're not going to look at it for that one. Why?
Yeah, because it's not like you're saying, like, it's – because, again, the coaches only have a certain – they got one, possibly two challenges. So it's not like you go, we just don't want to open up all these different things. Like, who cares? They only have them at most two challenges to use in the game anyway. So if they're going to use it for a kick, let them use it for a kick. Who cares? Like, that is a bizarre rule that they would have that. I mean, that's a terrible call that's very unfortunate for Indiana in that situation. The illegal screen call. Yes, is it an illegal screen? Yes, technically he's moving there.
He moved
there
a little bit.
I hate the fact. I mean, DiVincenzo clearly flopped. I hate rewarding flops, which is what they did in that situation.
I wouldn't have called it. I wouldn't have called it. He moved a little bit
in that situation. It shouldn't be called. Like, mm-hmm. You don't call an illegal screen 30 feet from the basket with 12 seconds to go in a game. Like, just don't. Unless it's the most absolute blatant, like, hip check. But it was clear that DiVincenzo flopped. So I hate deciding a game on that. But then for Indiana, like Indiana, then for Nembhard to foul before the inbounds pass is just the dumbest play ever. Like,
right.
You have to make sure it's inbounds, because then you're going to get a chance to tie the game at worst.
Could get a 5-second call, could get a steal.
But again, right? Like, you, if you foul him and he makes two free throws to go up three, you can tie the game. Now you give him the free throw to go up two, and then you're going to foul again, and they go up four, and the game's over. Like, the only way you weren't going to have a chance to at least tie the game was if you give him that, if you foul them before the inbounds pass to give them the free throw and then the inbounds again.
Right.
And he does it. Like, you just, you can't make that mistake and in that situation. And it was like blatantly obvious thing. He grabs onto him as he tries to make a cut. So I, like, that play is so dumb. It's crazy. But, and I don't, like, Halliburton, I don't know how bad his back is. But I mean, in that fourth quarter, like, he didn't even look to shoot, never looked at the rim, like, had zero field goal attempts, zero assists. He didn't do anything in that fourth quarter. I don't know if the back is that bad or what it is, but, like, if he's not healthy, like, I mean, 'cause he's got to do something. Like, you can't have him in the fourth quarter literally doing nothing for the team.
I like Halliburton an awful lot, but we're very quick to anoint superstardom. He's not there yet. I mean, again, whether it's his back or not, if it's his back, there's more of an excuse, but you have to pick it up. You have to become an integral part of your team if you're going to win, if you're that guy, and right now he's not that guy. All right, Cleveland-Boston tonight, Dallas-Oklahoma City tonight, so they begin their series. You were going to say something here before we go to the break?
Well, a couple of texts I was going to get to here. One says, could the coach not have challenged the foul call with Towns in that late game? No, because there wasn't a call. It was a no call. You can't challenge a no call.
Right.
So you can't say that, hey, he charged and call. There's no way to challenge that. You can only challenge a call that is made, not a call that is not made. And Brad says, Brunson is replacing Butler as Mr. Playoffs. This run he is on. I mean, again, when you're going to get 40 every single night in the postseason. That's pretty impressive stuff.
I mean, what Brunson is doing for the Knicks and what Edwards is doing for Minnesota is a shot in the arm. Here's new blood for the NBA. It's not yet over for LeBron and Steph and KD, but you could see the changing of the guard. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander about ready to start for Oklahoma City in their series against Dallas. You know, Luka's only 25. You're seeing the changing of the guard.
Roy on Twitter says, Minnesota dialed it up on D. We're more aggressive. They're allowed to do that the rest of the series. We're going to see a sweep and not the gentleman type. Yeah, again, I mean, I think if you let Minnesota play that physical, especially when you get Gobert back.
Right.
Like, that's like, because that was the thing. If they, you know, Denver clearly wanted to get, if you get Cat a couple of early fouls, well, now they're screwed up front. And that's why that non-charge call was so huge. If he gets two fouls in the first quarter, that's a massive thing. With no Gobert, if you take Cat out of the game, they become really small and have no chance to guard Jokic. And I think that's what even made Malone more upset about not getting it, is it would have been a massive difference in that game.
Salute to Chris Finch, because he has that team bought into defense. There are some really good defensive players, and Anthony Edwards can play defense as well. So hats off to them. And then real quick, no surprise, Victor Wembanyama officially announced as the NBA Rookie of the Year. He's the sixth unanimous selection for Rookie of the Year in the NBA. He's the third Spur to win the NBA Rookie of the Year award. Folks, Smoke Slam, the world's ultimate barbecue showdown, is coming to Memphis May 16th through the 18th. It'll be at Tom Lee Park on the river in downtown Memphis. We're putting the festival back in barbecue. It's going to be a great time. More than 50 teams competing for the largest cash purse in barbecue history. Live music from the likes of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, the Barquets, War, Tone Loke, Rob Bass, Young MC, just to name a few. A fan-first experience like no other. Celebrity chef live cooking demos. You can indulge in mouth-watering barbecue samples from the greatest pitmasters in the country. That is key. Fireworks every night, carnival with a Ferris wheel, carousel, games for the kids. It's for the entire family. Single day general admission tickets, only $25. A three-day pass for general admission will be only $65, to take advantage of that three-day pass. And for more information, to purchase your tickets, simply go to SmokeSlam.com. SmokeSlam, the world's ultimate barbecue showdown, coming to Memphis on the river May 16th through the 18th. When we come back, Connor O'Gara joins us from Saturday Down South. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. You know that I can
use somebody. Welcome back, everyone. 7:31 the time. Just getting underway on a Tuesday morning. Thank you for tuning in. Every other Tuesday, we get a chance to talk to one of the best in the business in covering college football and other things. It's time for Connor O'Gara.
It's time to talk some SEC and college football. Joining Greg and Eli is Connor O'Gara from SaturdayDownSouth.com and SaturdayTradition.com. Here's Connor O'Gara with Greg and Eli.
Connor, in fact, is the senior national columnist for Saturday Down South, the host of the Saturday Down South podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. He joins us now on Sports 56 Mornings. What's going on, Connor?
Not a whole lot. I turned 34 years young over the weekend, so got to go to the beach.
Yes.
Thank you. Mid-30s, a pretty irrelevant birthday in the grand scheme of things, but nice to be able to get a little bit of time away and, enjoy a nice little early May weekend.
I always felt, when I hit 35, I was like, okay, now I'm starting to feel a little bit older. Like, 35, for some reason, was the age for me.
Well, that doesn't make me feel very good, does it?
Different strokes for different folks, though.
You said 34?
He's 34 now.
So you got your Walter Payton.
Exactly. Eli, I actually thought of that several times, and I always try and think of, you know, the athlete that correlates to my specific birthday. Like, last year was obviously Scottie Pippen, a big one for me. I know people would say, oh, it's Larry Bird. No, it's Scottie Pippen. So I think of that each and every year. There are going to be some difficult times coming up, but when we get to like 36 and whatnot, I don't know what we're going to do. But yeah, for now, the Walter Payton year is in full effect.
You got a 35 already in mind?
Frank Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah, the Big Hurt. There you go. Speaking of the Bears, since he brought up Walter Payton, we haven't spoken to you since the draft took place. You got to be extremely happy with the draft for your Chicago Bears.
I'm giddy. And look, the Caleb Williams thing, I had already accepted that months ago that it was going to happen. I was bummed that Justin Fields didn't work out, but I am so unbelievably excited for Caleb Williams. And if this doesn't work, I just don't know what possibly will. But yeah, I mean, the Roma Dunze pick. So funny enough, I had him on my show the day before the draft. And
oh, wow.
So the episode wasn't going to come out until after the draft, but we basically recorded under the premise of, man, like, I really hope that by the time people are listening to this, you're a Bear. And, you know, that was the conversation for a decent chunk of it. But obviously getting some intel on the Kalen DeBoer offense and those things was great as well. But so to see the Bears draft him, a guy that just seems like he's going to be such a great fit in an NFL locker room and has such a great bond with Caleb Williams, yeah, I'm so fired up. I mean, the Bears drafted Torrey Taylor. That alone should have been enough to get me fired up for this draft. They got a punter in the fourth round. These are the types of things that you dream about when you're losing franchise. So, yeah, life is good for Bears fans.
Hey, I said earlier, you draft the Iowa punter. It is concerning. You wonder how many punts are left in that leg because he's had to punt a lot so far in his career.
Yeah, you know, there is some wear and tear. There's only so many punts that are available in one leg, just like we talk about with running backs. You know, it's very similar. Can't take that for granted. But that's why you got to go and get him in the fourth round. Like, this guy might only have 5 good years left in him, and you just got to make sure that guy gets all of his good punts out for your franchise.
All right, so there's a lot going on in the news, especially in what could happen with this CBA and revenue sharing that we could have. I'm going to get your thoughts on all that in a second, how you think it's going to end up going down. I did want to ask you, though, about Kirby's new deal that'll pay him $13 million per season. I guess the question immediately is, when some coach signs that huge contract, no matter if it's professional or collegiate, is he worth it? And I don't even think it's a question. What about you?
Not even a question. You're exactly right. If anything, he's underpaid. If Georgia announced that they were paying Kirby Smart $20 million a year, I'd say, yep, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to push back on that whatsoever. It's never been more lucrative to be in this business, to be good in this business. And Kirby Smart is the only coach in college football that's sitting there with seven consecutive top seven finishes in the AP poll, got as many losses in the last three seasons as he does national championships. This is someone who you're not looking at that buyout figure. In this adapt or die world, he's not Dabo Swinney. He has adapted. He has taken on the transfer portal, not necessarily in the way that others have, but he has still used it to his advantage, and he's done so with you know, great success so far. So I think that everybody looks at that Kirby deal and goes, well, you better make sure that that guy never leaves for another school. Mm-hmm. And that's what Georgia has made sure that, even though, look, it's Kirby's alma mater and, you know, his love for Georgia is unmatched, but you never want that day to come or for that discussion to even come up. And with this contract, you can all but guarantee that Kirby is not going anywhere. And look, he's going to be at Georgia as long as they'll have him.
So how excited are you that we now have the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop?
It's kind of amazing that it took this long, right?
I mean
right?
I hope this is a long-term deal. I mean, first of all, that title rolls off the tongue. But, I mean, good. We got Snoop Dogg back in college football.
Why did this not happen in 1998? Like, you know, I mean, I get it. You know, it's the first alcohol sponsor for a bowl game. They're just kids. People forget that, except the kids that are out there who are 25 years old who can rent a car to get to the bowl game. But, yeah, it's been a long time coming. Having all the different brand affiliations with that bowl game will make it must-see TV. You know, Arizona Bowl was the same one that had the Barstool sponsor the last couple of years. They're clearly not afraid to do things a bit differently. And, the Gin and Juice Bowl, I mean, if we don't get a Gatorade tub of gin and juice, we're doing this all wrong.
How soon before cannabis and such will be a sponsor of a bowl game?
Well, we got Snoop Dogg, don't we have it kind of?
Right.
Kind of a secondary sponsor here.
I mean, we have gambling now. We have hard liquor. We have everything. Cigarettes, right? I guess that's the only thing we don't have.
I think cigarettes missed its window. I think that was going to happen. It was going to be more of a 1960s Mad Men type vibe to it. Just a cloud of smoke filling the stadium. That's pretty much Tennessee, Alabama every year, but cigar smoke, so a little bit different there. But I'm not holding my breath on there being the marijuana sponsors with dispensaries on the sidelines or anything. I think there are too many probably states in our region of the country that would push back on such a thing, and some people would make that their cause that they're fighting for, and this is ruining America or whatever. So that would probably have a little bit too much pushback, whereas the gin and juice era is officially upon us.
All right, so obviously there's the huge story that's kind of floating out there that hasn't come to fruition yet, but what's going to happen in this this suit against the NCAA? If it goes to court, it would be January 2025. Most people believe that it will not go to court and that the NCAA will be paying billions of dollars to schools, and then the fallout from what could be revenue sharing. I'm going back to the Ross Dellinger Yahoo Sports story that it could cost schools $300 million each over 10 years, a $17 to $22 million revenue sharing cap, so on and so forth. What are you, with your expert opinion and your intel and people you've talked to, what do you think is going to happen? And what are we looking at as far as the ramifications of whatever ends up happening as far as the future of college football specifically, but college sports in general?
Revenue sharing. I mean, that's what this is going to get to. And it's going to be murky with all the lawsuits right now and trying to figure out what exactly is going to go into each one of those. And I don't necessarily know, you know, for certain that everybody's going to be on board with that $17 to $22 million payroll that Ross had in the article. But it's a goal of getting to revenue sharing. If we think about the basic premise, if we just kind of strip this all down and look at why have so many opinions about college athletes being paid? Why have those opinions changed over the course of the last decade plus? Well, it's because of these TV contracts, right? And if we're at a place where TV contracts have changed the opinions to where that money is just too great, then why would it make sense to continue for the rest of the decade to have private equity and collectives and things like that funding these, you know, this compensation when in reality there should be a different source? That is the source that's fueling all this. So let that TV money be what's going to allow athletes to get paid through the universities. Now, that's not exactly an easy thing, obviously, because of, you know, employment status and all those different things that they're still figuring out. But that's what this is going to come down to. That feels inevitable at this point, is that revenue sharing model will exist. Coaches want guardrails. I can't think of any coach that's coming out saying, yeah, I love the lack of guardrails. I would love to be able to exist in this chaotic system and continue to have to raise money for collectives. Revenue sharing will eventually get here. It's just a matter of what it's going to look like.
But if we have the revenue sharing, we will still have the collectives, won't we?
I don't think you need collectives.
It's just more money. It's just more money to pay kids.
Yeah, I think Connor,
they can still make money off their name and image, like, and name image likeness, like, and it's just more money for those schools that can come up with it. So instead of paying you $1 million, we can pay you $2 million or $3 million, whatever.
If I'm not wrong, I mean, the way I look at it is this: they're talking about revenue sharing. A part of obviously what the schools bring in is going to go to the student athletes. So there's compensation. It's almost like a paycheck. And then in addition, the collectives will obviously raise money to go to players for whatever the case may be, in product selling and in autographs and things like that. And that will be another source of revenue for the athlete. Am I wrong about that?
No, I don't think you're wrong. It's just I don't think that you need it in its current sense. And what I mean by that is, okay, let's say that number about Ohio State is actually true, the $13 million they need to be able to sustain this roster, to get them the pieces that they want via the transfer portal. That's all funded through collectives. Now, in this day and age that we're hopefully going to get to with revenue sharing, you wouldn't need all that money funded through collectives. So, yes, you could still have some money that comes in over the top, but the basis of your financial payroll, whatever it may be, doesn't have to be funded through that. Mm-hmm. And so that's more so, I think, how this is going to be approached, where you're not feeling like, oh man, if we want to keep this offensive tackle and pay him $750,000, it needs to be done through this collective to be able to raise money there.
Gotcha.
That can be taken care of on, you know, through the mainline revenue sharing model that's going to exist for these programs.
Okay. And then the other thing is, and like you said, who knows what Dellinger's reporting is, it's not solid gold yet. We don't know if, first of all, the deal will be accepted and all that. But if it was, let's just say for the sake of this discussion, $17 to $22 million, well, how do schools like Memphis, how do they stay afloat?
The exact question that I think a lot of those are asking. I mean, I think they're not going to operate within that specific payroll, whatever you want to call it, that budget. Their budget will be lesser, and it's going to be lesser no matter what. I mean, there's no way in which the group of five, whatever you want to call it, is going to be operating under the same financial limitations that we're going to see from the Big Ten and the SEC. And I mentioned those two because those two are obviously going to be bringing in more money through their TV contracts. They're going to be bringing in more money through their playoff deal. And if that's going to be the case, then it's just going to skew things even more. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's a very fair point to bring up. And it's one that will continue to frustrate those who are operating under that. And it begs the question, do you want to have this group of five championship that is separate from the rest of the power conferences? It's a fair question to ask, even if some don't feel that it really justifies, you know, the conversation that we're having right now.
Yeah. He is the great Connor O'Gara, senior national columnist for Saturday Down South, host of the Saturday Down South podcast. Make sure to catch him every other Tuesday talking with us here on Sports 56 Mornings. Follow him on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Always great stuff, Connor. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Gentlemen, appreciate it.
Take care.
Mother's Day is coming up this weekend, and the folks at Genesis Diamonds have everything you need for mom. They've got great gift ideas for mom, something that she will appreciate, something timeless, something that she wear every day. You don't have to break the bank for it. They've got something for every budget out there. So make mom extremely happy with a great piece of jewelry from Genesis Diamonds. Maybe it's not for mom. Maybe you've got a special occasion coming up. Maybe you've got a graduation. Maybe you're thinking about getting engaged, need a perfect engagement rings. Well, you can find it all at Genesis Diamonds. Stop in, see the folks at Genesis Diamonds at Poplar and Perkins Extended. Talk to one of their great consultants there, not commissioned salespeople. They've got folks working there. They're not working on commission. They're just there to help you and educate you on the whole jewelry buying experience, what you should be looking for in diamonds and this and that, what affects price, all those things. They're there to help you pick out that perfect piece of jewelry, whether it's for mom or anybody special in your life. That is Genesis Diamonds, Poplar and Perkins Extended.
When we come back, the Memphis Tigers football team adds a player. We'll tell you who it is. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Yesterday we were talking about two new Tigers that Ryan Silverfield was able to get through the portal, one being a running back, the other a defensive lineman, and I said they're going to get an offensive lineman. They really need to get another offensive lineman. I still think they need to get another defensive back. Well, you can check off the offensive lineman from your list, as yesterday was announced that Chris Adams had committed to the University of Memphis, I guess, on his social media. Adams comes from Old Dominion, and that's where Blake Watson came from, and that's where another player on the Tigers roster this year came from. So they got a little pipeline going with the Monarchs from ODU. This guy has several starts, has been around college football for several years now, so as a veteran player. Chris Adams joining the University of Memphis. He had originally committed to Washington and then flipped to the University of Memphis. So that's probably a story within the story, but certainly good news for Memphis. You can never have enough offensive linemen.
That is true. The depth at the offensive line is always a very, very good thing.
Basketball transfer portal news. J.J. Taylor, remember him? What will you remember most about the J.J. Taylor era at the University of Memphis? Which of his 5 minutes do you remember the most?
It was the third one.
The third minute?
Third minute was one of the five.
Zach, do you like the third minute or a different minute?
I like the first couple of minutes.
First couple of minutes were nice. Yeah, you know, you never.
I thought he was just kind of getting his feet wet. I thought really in that third minute he played, he really got locked in. First minute he seemed a little tentative. Second minute he was kind of getting warmed up. Third minute, yeah. I really felt like it was like he was. That was it. That was the highlight of it all.
J.J. Taylor has committed to UCF. No surprise. Is Mikey Williams actually going to play for UCF? I mean, the whole thing is weird. It was strange last year with Memphis.
Has he done his community service?
Has he done his service? I don't know. Is he now an upstanding citizen?
Has he not shot at anybody else?
Hopefully not. Or as the Tom Brady roasters would say, just, you know, do your job. Block, catch the passes, and don't kill anybody. J.J. Taylor, but he did commit yesterday to UCF. Again, no surprise. Also, Kentucky transfer Aduchero has committed to Arkansas. So he's going to follow John Calipari to the University of Arkansas. Several of his players have done that. Not all of them have, and we're still waiting on DJ Wagner, who hasn't made up his mind. I would imagine it will eventually end up being where he will play for John Calipari at Arkansas. I think Arkansas is one or two on the list of, you know, the best transfer class, and it makes a lot of sense. They had to pretty much fill a whole roster.
Replace an entire team.
Exactly. Memphis is on that list as well, though. They are sitting there at number 10, and Memphis still has a number of players to go out and get Penny Hardaway and his staff to not only fill a roster, but to also fill some voids, including on the front line. Our buddy DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal tweeting out a story on Tony Allen that it will happen this upcoming 24-25 season, that Tony Allen's jersey will be officially retired. They were going to do it this past year, if I'm not mistaken. And then, of course, his legal – or two years ago. That's what I thought. Yeah, 2 years ago, because this past year was Marcus All. So 2 years ago, he had his legal issues. That's been rectified. And now Tony Allen, according to DeMichael and the Grizzlies, will have his jersey hanging on the rafters one day during a ceremony this upcoming 24-25 season. That will leave only Mike Conley from the core four, and that will eventually happen as well.
This hour of our program is brought to you by the Big Green Egg. It is the best grill there is, last grill you'll ever need to buy. When you get that Big Green Egg, just absolutely unbelievable what you could do with it, whether you're cooking low and slow at 200 degrees for hours upon hours, or you're firing it up to 750 degrees to sear a steak or anything in between. The Big Green Egg allows you to do it very, very easily. The Big Green Egg, all the accessories as well. You can see it in action. You can taste samples from it. Get all your questions that you possibly need answered out at Memphis and May World Championship Barbecue Cooking Contest. They will be out there. They'll be in Barbecue Alley with the Big Green Eggs set up, cooking food during barbecue, during the barbecue contest, in order to allow you to try samples off of it. And again, if you've got questions, they're going to have people there to answer those questions for you. You can also go to biggreenegg.com to get all the details about the Big Green Egg. You can go to the Ace Hardware stores around town. You can go to Hamilton Fireplace. They're all carriers of the Big Green Egg. That's where you'll find them. It, again, the best grill there is, it is the Big Green Egg.
Jeff Crane will join us at 8:25, the University of Memphis interim AD, and of course, his regular position as deputy AD. I'm sure he'll be talking about the graduation of the student athletes over the weekend. Congratulations to all students who graduate, whether it be the University of Memphis or whatever the school may be. But they had a number of student athletes who graduated, and a number of them graduated with honors. One of those student athletes that graduated, Dante Stewart from the Memphis Tigers baseball team, well, he was also named the American Conference Player of the Week. So quite the week for Dante Stewart. Stewart hit 500 for the week, was 7 of 14, had two dingers, four runs batted in, five runs scored, a 1.579 OPS. He had 13 total bases. He also had four walks, two hit by batter, so he reached base an awful lot. Memphis won 3 out of 4. They took 2 of 3 over the weekend from the Tulane Green Wave in a big American Conference showdown in New Orleans. Tigers will play tonight, weather permitting, at Arkansas State. And then after that, just 6 games left in the regular season, a 3-game weekend series this weekend against UAB in Birmingham. And then next weekend, it'll be a 3-game series to wrap it up on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week when they host Wichita State. So congratulations to Dante Stewart. 1 hour in the books. When we come back, hour number two, we'll open up things with Humdinger's Trivia. As I mentioned, we'll talk to Jeff Crane. We got Mickey Barker to join us at 9:05 in hour three in our weekly golf segment. Austin Chin will also join us to talk some golf. And then at 9:25, Lawrence Dockery will join us from the 901 Soccer Podcast and World Soccer Talk. Big one tonight for Memphis 901 FC in the U.S. Open Cup as they'll play the Dallas FC Dallas team in Texas and try for a second straight year to knock off an MLS team. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.